George, how are you?
Good, thank you. Always a pleasure.
That's great. So it's been a year since we spoke with you about innovation footprint in India. So how has the book been received in India or any other parts of the world, and what has been happening since then? It's been a year in the innovation space in your life.
Yeah, look, the book obviously has been a big part of my life, and it also has been a central locus in terms of drawing all my energies towards the work on innovation I was doing. The last year, of course, the book has led me to speak in about 7 or 8 different conferences and different events, and especially international as well as locally here in Australia. So the ideas and the concepts have been received very well, and I think that was the objective of the book itself, in terms of bringing a new profile of people who can actually take the brand of India to the rest of the world. So I think that's achieved that objective.
Well, that's wonderful.
So I'm pretty pleased with the outcome.
Okay.
I know that it's been selling, and a lot of universities have bought the book and have used it from a research perspective, and which is another objective of what I was trying to do. So,
and what forums you mentioned? What sort of forums have you been talking in?
Last month I was one of the speakers at the Australian Economic Forum, one of the few speakers, I should say, from India, and looking at the Indian economy from the Australian standpoint. And that's been an area of interest for me as well, because there's a lot of coverage about China and what China is doing.
Absolutely.
And very few
mention of India.
And also, Indians coming up and speaking about India itself has been a trickle in this country compared to the US.
Yeah.
So I think it's been an honor and a pleasure for me to actually do that.
So one or two highlights from these forums that you would like to share?
Any
of the messages, any key messages coming for Indians' interest?
Right. So each conference and each event is very different.
Yeah.
So Australian Economic Forum was looking at the Australian economic aspects, different sectors of industry, and what Australia needs to do in terms of being more engaged with the world economy and stuff like that. And the engagement with India was a sidelight and one of the things that you do. But every speaker would mention China, because China is on the broader agenda of Australia as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
But a large amount of focus in these conferences, especially the Australian ones, are on the Australian economy.
And of course, China
will be part of that whole conversation.
Mm.
So my objective was to bring the India conversation into the picture. And I think we're beginning to start to do
seeing
that.
Change.
Well.
Okay, that's good. Just wanted to talk about a really topical issue that has, absorbed our minds and soul in the last couple of months, which is the whole movement against corruption in India. So Anna Hazare movement, and, how people have in full force, supported him and voiced their repulsion against the whole corrupt system in India. So I just wanted to understand how corruption interfaces with the way innovation system is operating in India. Is there an interface, and how do you think that affects the future of innovation or knowledge economy in India?
Look, these are two separate issues, and there are intersects, and I'll just briefly cover that. First of all, I fully support all the movements that you've seen against corruption, and I think I believe that the only way corruption can be rooted out in the country is when the population starts to see that as an evil and starts to work
Which is,
corruption.
I think, what this Anna Hazare movement has done.
Exactly.
It will impact on the psyche of,
exactly,
the whole of India, but also particularly new generation. So I think that has been achieved in many ways. Yeah.
Right. At the same time, for corruption to happen, there is a giver and a taker.
Yes.
We talk about takers a lot, and when the mass population stops giving,
that's right.
I think
so. You have to play your role in the whole
absolutely
system. Yeah.
And so from that perspective, this whole movement is good, and I also see that as the engagement of the population on very critical issues for the nation.
Hmm.
Corruption has been holding us back for a long time, so
yeah,
it's good to see that happening. And again, as I said in the last interview, that The middle class does not engage very well with with the main
4% of us go and vote.
That's right.
Yeah, so, you're right.
So it's good to see a lot of people coming out to the front and give support for a national, evil like corruption.
Yeah.
So that's been the good part. So the link within innovation and corruption. See, corruption is a problem that we've had systemically, I would say.
Mm.
And we need to continue to sort out those issues as we look at, our current India and going forward.
Mm.
Innovation is about our future. We have no hope in the world if we don't innovate from both an industrial perspective in what we do in terms of business, in terms of what we want to become as a nation.
Mm.
So I would see innovation slightly different in a different plane than corruption. Corruption, of course, would stop us from innovating.
Right. Maybe corruption will actually promote innovation in a way, because we'll have to find new and innovative ways to get around the system and make things happen.
That's true. That's
social innovation, particularly in that space, I think that will emerge, especially because the current system is not helping.
No, absolutely. So if you think about innovation as solving problems, then yes.
You
have to find out ways to actually deal with the system. And people have.
Hmm.
The people who have come out of, or build companies and run large operations in India do know how to do that.
Yeah.
But my focus and my interest is to see a large, sort of movements created around what is the India that we want to be in 25 years?
Yes. So looking what do we into do future.
What do we do to build that?
Yeah.
I know that we'll have problems, so we need to fix current problems. But someone who is focused on the future of India, rather than say, oh, we've got problems, we've got corruption, I can't do much.
I guess the question people would ask is, with the system currently, in sort of crippled system with corruption, can we take the privilege to look into the future when we can't fix our, present?
No, I'm saying that it's two sides of a coin. So,
as citizens, we would have
a role to contribute to the current as well as the future.
Yeah.
But I'm saying is that we should not get into the mindset, and because in every forum that we bring up these issues, people say, "Ah, no great thing will come out of India." You look at the corruption, things are.
You were there as well, Shashi Tharoor's lecture. He said that despite of corruption, we need to start looking at other horizons. Despite of the system having corruption, maybe that's the thing you're reflecting as well.
That's right. Look at the software industry. It's a $100 billion business, which started when corruption is being part of the mainstream.
Yeah.
I still remember Infosys, took about 18 to 20 months to get the first computer imported into the country and just lying with our customs.
Right.
Now, these companies, corporations, people who've built the new India in terms of the new brand have gone through the corruption that we so despise today.
Yeah.
And they've worked with it, and they've worked in spite of it. They brought a new India, new country, and new perspectives working with the existing system. So all the more that, it's possible for us now, because now that we've got a social engagement, now that the middle class is coming into the mainstream to fight these evils, that we can actually go forward much faster.
Okay. Just trying to, in my next question, I'm trying to bring the whole concept of innovation onto a scale that we understand a bit better. So talking about innovation as an economy sector. And I'm referring to an article while I say this. It's a BBC article that I was reading. It's called Battles of the Knowledge Superpowers. And they compare innovation sector with health sector, for example, or IT sector, like any other sector that, provides jobs and economy for a country. So they put innovation there. And the article talks about how Europe is perhaps going through what they say is an innovation emergency. So we talked about this article a few weeks back, actually, on Voice of India. And one of the questions I thought about was, of course, the article doesn't talk about India, like you were saying. China, they refer to. And I think they talk about Asia, and I think India would be an inherent part of Asia, but they don't specifically talk about India. But the question I was thinking about was, they're saying Europe is facing an innovation emergency. What do you think where do you think India stands in context of that? Are we well established, well, you know, set up to not have an emergency? So compared to Europe, US, I think, is quite way ahead of other part of the world. I don't know what your views on that, but where does India stand this battle?
Yeah, look, I looked at that article myself, and I think it was talking more about the capacities that different nations have for innovation. So
right.
It is very, it accurately paints a picture that the European countries that used to lead in innovation, and if you look at the World Economic Forum's Global Competitiveness Report, you know, it has traditionally featured countries like Denmark and Switzerland
mm-hmm.
To lead the innovation space for a long time.
Yeah.
And so it's talking about innovation capacity. And so
right.
if you look at capacities of different nations and different, you know, Europe being a continent,
mm-hmm.
It is true that Europe is facing a deficit primarily because of several reasons that it's got an aging population. The
mm-hmm.
number of people available to do research is dwindling. And there are a number of other compounded issues. Like, whereas if you look at the U.S., U.S. still has a deep innovation
capacity. Good demography opportunity, yeah.
So typically there are three things that one needs to look at when you look at, innovation and how innovation-driven economies run.
Mm-hmm.
One is the capacity to do innovation, which is primarily the institutions you have, the number of people doing research, the number
yeah.
of people wanting to create new markets and new services and new products.
But it's also a culture, isn't it? It's a culture of any country or any nation. In US, every single person there has seen that culture, has seen that sort of taking risk culture get succeed in life.
Yes.
In Europe, in Australia, we don't take risks as much as
yes.
US. That's probably what I'm trying to say. So if Europe is facing a deficit, it's probably not just what happened in the last couple of years. I think it probably has a bit of background in the past that they just never cultivated that culture. Do you think that's...
See, culture is an important part.
Mm.
The American culture is risk-taking. It's about
yeah.
you know, what do you... how do you create wealth? How do you
yeah.
push the envelope?
And exactly.
What do you do?
Mm.
Asian cultures are more conservative because
yeah.
you've seen a lot of misery in life.
Yeah.
That you don't want to be another statistic and say,
yeah.
okay, we tried and failed.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and the other thing is that, you know, some of these economies and cultures do have the, means to take risks as well.
True.
Like, for example, in India, if you don't work or earn, there's no social security net
yeah.
to support you.
Yeah. So with that point in mind, where does India stand in terms of this battle of innovation and knowledge?
Look, I think...
Against Europe and US and...
Yeah, so I think if you're talking about that article, the article was one-sided in the sense that it does not look at markets like the countries like India at all.
Yeah.
And I think they sort of club India with China as well. And from my perspective where I'm sitting, if you look at the latest data of the number of patents that
right.
have been filed in the US
yeah.
From countries around the world,
mm-hmm.
India has got a higher growth rate per year than even China.
Wow,
so
okay.
India's got about 25% year-on-year growth. This is the compounded average growth
yeah,
rate
yeah.
Over the last 15 years.
Right.
And China has got something like 22%. Of course, in absolute terms, we are much, much behind many of these countries. Like, for example, every year China brings or is granted some 3,000 patents.
Mm-hmm.
India is in the region of about 1,200.
Wow.
Whereas if you look at the US, it's
mm-hmm.
It's over 100,000 per year.
Yeah, yeah, I can.
So that's the scale you're talking about.
Yeah.
But if you look at the absolute numbers again of India and China versus Europe,
mm.
it is comparable.
Yeah.
So in about 5 to 10 years, India would have more patents than some of these individual European countries.
Okay.
Like for example, Australia, gets about 4,000 to 5,000 patents every year.
Right.
So India is already one-third of that or one-fourth of that.
Oh, so Australia has more patents.
It's ahead of us. In absolute numbers. In absolute numbers.
Right. I was
but
aware
in terms
of that.
In terms of growth rate,
yeah.
The number of additions that you do per year,
okay.
our growth rate is one of the fastest in the world.
Okay. All right,
so in terms
you.
Of growth rates, yes.
Okay. Again, drawing from the same article, they talk about education as being a very strong sort of foundation stone of... innovation.
Yeah.
And in the article they talked about China and Chinese children working really hard, like 12-hour day type thing in schools. And the European Commissioner for, I think, for innovation or whatever her title is, she seems to think that European kids cannot do that, and that somehow is a bad thing. Now, I always have a very strong opinion on this, on having a balanced life for kids and not having, you know, a very hard working lopsided lifestyle. But do you think, one, that hard work, you know, necessarily means innovation? And secondly, does India and Indian education system, do you think that has a strong underpinning for our innovation map into the future? Like, how important is our education system, or how efficient is our education system in terms of its role in innovation?
Yeah, so there are so many questions in that statement.
I know.
firstly, defragment
those.
firstly, if we look at the education system and that lady talking about China, I would say that she has not gone to India. For example, my niece wakes up at 5:30 in the morning to go to.
I agree that I think we probably have a similar hardworking. So she's just talking about Asia, perhaps.
Right.
So you're right, but you know, does it necessarily mean lateral thinking or out of box approach that our kids are necessarily having? That sort of a approach.
No, look,
through hard work.
So the quality of education certainly has an impact on innovation and productivity.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that many of the students who are coming out of Indian education system, although some of them are very creative, they've not been trained to be, you know, to bring out creative outputs that can actually be commercialized for, you know, for industrial purpose or for domestic consumption.
Yeah.
We're not trained like that. That training is very different. What we have been trained on in our education system is to score marks and, you know,
it's a great base system, absolutely. Yeah,
right. But if, from an innovation perspective at a national level, we need to understand that we still need to have large numbers of graduates and people available for research.
Which we have
and which we'll continue to have.
But so again, more number of graduates, does it necessarily mean
does not
more
mean,
research?
No, does not mean research. But
but
if you look at, there are not too many metrics that you can avail, you sort of measure in absolute innovation. One of the things you could look at is the number of PhDs you have. You can look at the number of patents and papers that is published. And you can look at the number of patents per per capita that you're producing. Those are some of the loose ways of looking at innovation success. So from my perspective, as far as the knowledge economy is concerned, the number of population and the number of graduates that we're producing every year is going to contribute towards the larger economic health of the country. But in terms of innovation, it's a factor of creativity, it's a factor of the drive, it's a factor of risk appetite, it's also the inventive culture. Like, for example, if I had a bright idea and I went to my uncle and said, can you fund me, he will say, you take a walk. So why that I have to go to my uncle is because I don't have venture capitalists who would fund me to do something, or I don't have the infrastructure within the country to support me to do that. And which is exactly what the Silicon Valley has in the US, for example.
They have absolutely.
So if I have an idea, I can take it to someone who would at least listen to me and probably give me some funding to actually progress that idea.
Is that changing though in India?
It is changing to a limited extent. And again, the other thing is about, in our cultures, we don't encourage failure. Whereas in Silicon Valley, one of the key ingredients that they look
fail
for...
Fail faster.
Yeah, they expect you to fail. And if you have failed a few times, you're more likely to get a funding.
Absolutely,
rather than,
your first
not
venture.
Get a funding.
Yeah.
Because they want to ensure that you've had experiences that you have learned from.
Yeah.
And you won't.
And that's the mindset, that's the culture I was talking about earlier,
right.
That U.S. cultivates that. It could simply be because of the sheer number of people, that they have more opportunities. But coming back to India, where are we heading in the knowledge power space in terms of projection I'm talking about? So you talked about, crystal ball gazing, that's where your space is. You're looking into the future. So where do you see us heading, and how fast is our knowledge economy going to grow?
No, I think we've got a very healthy future. I think we continue to believe in that. If you look at the number of people who are coming into knowledge economy, in the knowledge economy industries, like more, but I'm not just talking about information technology, I'm talking not just biotechnology, in new areas that are coming, like for example space research or mm-hmm. some or basic research in fundamental sciences, the number of people going into those fields are increasing. That's a good sign. And the other thing is that, see, we should also never underestimate the fact that the domestic market is also growing. What that means is that there is more funding available for people to do other things other than just do, you know, a job.
Basically, yeah.
I know, for example, in my networks and in my personal networks, there are more people setting up companies. When I used to, head research at one of the labs in Infosys back in Bangalore,
mm-hmm.
I can recollect that 40% of my colleagues I had at that time are now have set up their own businesses.
Okay.
Small businesses, yeah. Reasonably sized businesses, and these are all, they've all become entrepreneurs.
Okay.
And the reason why they become entrepreneurs is because they don't have to, a lot of them don't have to worry about food on the table, because that has been addressed because they've been working for 10, 15 years in the local and that economy, and now that question
has been
addressed.
They have a bit of a backing now.
Yeah, so now they're thinking of what to do next and where to spend the rest of their life, and most of them are thinking of starting businesses so that, of course, there is a motive of earning more wealth, but other than that, it's also creating new services. Like, for example, I don't know how many of you know, there's a company in India called RedBus.in, which is primarily mm-hmm. Providing bus tickets to people who travel. And this is a setup by two engineers who are like 4 years and with a 4 years experience in software engineering, who's come together and built this business.
Okay.
And they got venture capital funding, and it's a profitable business today.
Ooh, wonderful.
Now, serving the domestic market. So when you want to go from a city, like for example, to Bangalore, to Mumbai or Pune, you actually go and book a ticket on redbus.in.
Okay.
And there is a business model behind it, and it serves people's purposes. And that's kind of, and the other example is Adam itself. Adam is a Notion Inc. product. It's a tablet, computer tablet,
made by six or seven
Indian engineers.
This is going to be sold for 2,000 rupees. Per tablet, so something
not that low. Yeah, I'm not talking.
They're
about
aiming
that.
For next. I think next version to be
right.
within 3,000 rupees or something.
Right.
Where can we get more information on some of the examples and case studies or patents that are coming? Good ones coming from India.
Look, unfortunately, we don't do enough. We don't market ourselves very well. We don't tell stories about what we have achieved. Talk to an average Indian, there will be hundreds of stories of what we have not achieved.
Yeah.
But if you look hard enough, you have those stories there. Like for example, I found this company in Gurgaon, which makes mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
But the innovation they've brought into the mobile phones is that you can actually use a battery, a AAA battery, along with your phone. And that to the Western world would be like meaningless.
Yeah.
But in India, it makes a lot of sense because you can take a battery to a country, to a rural
where there's no electricity
to charge your phone.
Mm.
And we've got 20% of our villages don't have electricity. So which means, you're thinking about the market.
Yeah.
So someone has come up with a bright idea, put that innovation in, and is now marketing, and is creating wealth that is being cycled into the economy.
Yeah.
Now, so there are a lot of stories like that.
But no central resource to share them. Because that's such an important part of cultivating, fostering that culture, isn't it?
Right.
To share powerful stories.
Oh, absolutely.
And we don't do that enough, so that's a shame.
Right.
But just to wrap up, so where are you heading in, your personal life and in innovation space? Another book?
See, I'm passionate about India, as you know.
Already. Yeah.
Continue to speak about India wherever I get the opportunity. And I'm starting to do that a lot here in Australia and also other parts of the world.
Yeah.
I just wrote a few blog posts for Forbes.
Right.
Forbes is one of the largest business magazines in the world.
Yes.
Very excited about that.
And yeah, that's wonderful.
That'll open more opportunities to sort of share these ideas on a global scale.
Yeah.
And so that will continue. And I'm also thinking about a sequel to the first book in terms of updating it with a lot of new examples and also developing those ideas beyond what I've covered, so that there will be more engagement with the rest of the world. And I firmly believe that in this part of the world, we don't hear too much about India because all the questions people ask is about, you know, the student problem and the corruption in India and yeah. Commonwealth Games and all the rest of it. But look, we've got to think beyond that.
Yeah.
But when I go to the US, for example, and sit with people who know what India is capable about, the conversations are very different.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is because we don't talk enough ourselves,
yeah.
Being Indians, talking about
what we have achieved.
Looking for these examples that you can showcase as an example
yeah.
to other people, and you know, encourage that whole not just a community feeling, but more about what we are capable of in
yeah.
terms of what we can do for the rest of the world, and tell those good stories as well.
Hmm.
Because I know that the media and the national obsession is about, you know, talking about the things that we probably have issues with.
Yeah.
But there are good stories out there we need to talk about.
Absolutely.
And I'm passionate about continuing that work.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to talk to you, because we talk about those issues ourselves. And I'm aware that sometimes we talk too much about those issues and not about good, powerful stories.
Right.
So thanks for sharing all those stories and your perspective on this very important topic of our times. And we'll speak with you soon when the next book is released. And all the best for your new book.
Thank you
very much.
For
the sequel.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, George.
Thank you.